I definitely think there's a component where I'm getting validation and I'm getting almost like drug addiction, like endorphins, because they'll shadow be. I mean, I'll be like depressed. Like I'll get a post removed and I'm like, here I am. May 2nd, I'm going to be 55 years old. And I'm like depressed because Instagram fucking, you know, I only got, you know, I lost 100 followers. And sometimes I got to sit back and go, dude, take a look at yourself. Like, it's not that serious. It's fucking Instagram, you know, but when they, you know, they're so sensitive when they remove something, like I'll have some post that's going ultra viral and all of a sudden, bang, I get an alert, your post has been removed, you know, offensive language. And it's like, I'm sick over it. You know what I mean? So yeah, there's definitely a component of validation and getting some type of rush.
All right, we got Bean Shooter in the house.
Yes.
Mr. Hey, Lee, Nickel, how are we doing?
Doing all right. How are you guys doing?
Just trying to get our nickel up, right?
Yeah. You're a gentleman, Mike. Thanks for coming on.
You're welcome.
We just wrapped up shooting for your podcast.
Yeah, had Ken Ride out on.
Talk about Ken, how you guys met, how long you guys have known each other.
I met through Mickey Ward. He does the fight podcast with Teddy Atlas. He was actually a guy in Billerica when he was a kid, but his life took a different path. He's in a finance world now and is a world-class runner. And I met through Mickey at the Boxing Hall of Fame 5 years ago, and we became friends since then. And then, you know, he followed me, and, you know, we followed each other on social media and whatever. he lived in L.A. Whenever I'd be in L.A., we'd hook up and go out to eat and vice versa. When he's back in Boston, we get together. And his journey is going up. He's doing good now. He's getting sponsored by Reebok and everything else, so Kenny's doing all right for himself.
Seems like he is.
If I could just, get a couple of his, whatever falls off him out of his pocket, we could nickel up a little, you know what I mean? that's the goal with everything, right, is to make money.
Exactly.
You know? Right. So that's what, like, nickel up means, you know, like anybody who's trying to hustle, anybody who's going, you know, out of their way to make a couple bucks in, like, a unique way. You know, you've had quite the career, Mike. You want to, like, start us on your different hustles that you've had across your lifetime and how you've gotten your nickel up, whether it's gotten you in trouble or not?
Yeah. I mean, I think I always had that. Well, I know I did. I always had that. You know, I didn't grow up with parents with money or anything. And, you know, I don't even think that matters. I have a friend who grew up whose parents were rich. His mother was rich, but he was just always a hustler and a worker. And, you know, I think you either got it or you don't. I don't think it really matters if you grew up poor, or you grew up middle class, or you grew up this. But I always, when I was a young kid, me and my friends, we'd go in the bars. A friend, I didn't have my own shine box, but my friends did. And we'd go in the bar. Back then, the bars, all the guys had suits and shoes on. And there was, I always say, that was the last of the dying breed, 80, 81, going in bars and shining shoes. And after that, it was buying bricks of firecrackers and bottle rockets. And I used to sell packs of firecrackers, 25 cents a piece. And, you know, then I started, I remember the first time I bought a bag of weed, I was like 11 or 12 selling joints. And I remember, I think it was like 35 bucks. And I rolled up a bunch of joints. We used to sell them $2 a piece, 3 for $5. And I remember I was done selling them. And I had like, whatever it was, 55, 60 bucks. And I still had two joints. And I was down this pool hall, the World of Games in Lowell. And I'm shooting pool. And I went to this place, Elliot's Hot Dogs, that I've been boycotting for the last year over personal reasons. But
can we get into that after?
Yeah.
I love Elliot's.
Yeah. So I remember sitting in there. I'm like, wow, this is great. I got money to go re-up. You know what I mean? And I got another 25 bucks in my pocket. I'm eating hot dogs. And just, it's just like I've always had that, you know, even... you know, like it was a bunch of different things I did from then, illegally selling drugs and everything else. But it was a point in my life when I was like, when I say homeless, I wasn't living in a tent like this homeless population now, but, you know, bouncing around and, you know, strung out on drugs pretty bad. But even then I was, you know, buying quantity of heroin and selling it to other addicts so I didn't have to pay. So it was like, I was always had money in my front left pocket, basically, you know? No matter what little amount,
that's one way to nickel up, I guess. Yeah. You know? I like what you said though. Like, you either have it or you don't, right? Like, yeah. You either have the hustle in you or you don't.
100%.
You can't really teach that, right?
100%. 100%. You know,
What environment were you growing up in when you were 11 or 12 because to even like think, oh, I should start selling joints? Because when I was 11 years old, you know, growing up in Chelmsford, I didn't even know what weed was, you know? So it's like, obviously I'm lucky that, you know, I didn't have to do that. But like, what was there ever like a moment that, you know, made you say I gotta kind of, you know, bend the envelope a little bit just to get ahead, put a couple bucks in my pocket?
I don't know, just the neighborhood I was in. I mean, there was, back then there was a lot of prostitution in my neighborhood and there was a lot of hard drugs and we used to see them, you know, pimp. I remember there was a pimp Red Dog. We joke about it and he'd be nodding out in the heroin and we were little kids and we'd be like imitating him, you know, and he'd always be like itching his nose saying, yo, I'm living the fast life. And we used to just around where we were, the neighborhood where we were, you know what I mean? It was just such a different time then, you know, you know, there was no cell phones, you know what I mean? You go out with your friends and that was it. No one could find you unless they knew who you were. And I don't know, it was just the group of kids I was around, I think. You know, I was always around the kids on the corner selling joints. And then 16, 17, I got into selling coke and I sold a lot of coke for a while. And then I went back to the weed. You know, I got a connection in San Diego and in Mexico and they used to UPS me weed. First it was coke, then it was weed and just... Yeah, it was just always, I don't know, you know, if it was one certain thing where I'm like, oh, I got to go out and make my own money or I'm not going to eat. It was just, I don't know, it was just the environment.
During that time, did you have like an end goal for it? Were you like, all right, this is what I'm doing now and I'm just kind of living in the moment, doing my thing, making some money? Or was there like, I want to do something after this?
No, I mean, it's funny. I was thinking about it earlier. I remember my father, he'd always say, what are you going to do when this fucking fairy tale life ends? You know, because I was making a lot of money when I was young. And I'd go in, he worked in this bar, the Gala Club. He was a bartender. And I always used to say, go to jail. You know, like I just knew that's how it was going to end. You know, I just always had, I mean, when I was younger, I was in DYS, you know, and I was in some foster homes when I was younger. And I just kind of knew if it went bad, you know, that's how it was going to end. I never really... You know, it's kind of a knock on me, I guess, that I never had, you know, an end game. Like, you know, I'm going to do this, these big giant goals and stuff. But I always kind of lived in the moment, you know, pretty much, you know.
And so, I mean, what you told your father did happen.
Right? Yeah, it came to fruition.
when that happened, like, what was it like? It wasn't a massive shock? Like, you were just kind of like, well, I had it coming for me? Or is like how did that come about?
Well, it sucked. You know, I found out somebody wore a wire on me, a close friend of mine, and they had a phone tap on me. And like I said, everyone didn't even have cell phones. They were just coming out around then, 93, 94. But they had a phone tap on me. They had a thing called a pen register device attached to my phone, which basically identifies any incoming calls and who they are and stuff like that. So they raided my house, my father's. They actually got me at my aunt's house at gunpoint and took me away. I mean, you know, it was somewhat of a shock, but, you know, not really. And I didn't think they had anything. And, you know, I'm like, I was kind of a wise guy on the way to the police station. I was like, I said, you got nothing, you know, and the cop goes, I'll never forget. There was an address in Drakett where I'd sent a lot of weed, UPS and FedEx the previous few weeks. And the guy says, how's 18 Oriole Drive sound to you? Turned around and looked at me, you know, and I was like, oh, I kind of quieted down, like, oh, I want to talk to a lawyer, you know, at this point. But he says to me, he goes, you know, in 9 years working, I don't know if it was DEA or State Police Drug Task Force, because it was like a joint thing where they arrested me. He goes, you're the first person to detect aerial surveillance within the first 10 minutes. So I was like, and I'll never forget, the guy goes, you can take some solace in that fact. I didn't know what solace meant, but I knew it was a compliment, you know.
How did you detect that aerial surveillance?
That was kind of by luck. I come out of my my father's house in a trash bag with me and the thing, and I had like an IROC Z28 and T-tops, and I was with two kids, Timmy King and Sean Mehta. Rest in peace, Timmy. Timmy passed away, and rest in peace, Sean. He also passed away. And I'm driving, and I said, see that helicopter up there? It's following me. I was just kind of paranoid at the time. And we just kept looking up, and I'm driving around, and I went all the way up, just by like past U Lowell along the river, and I turned around and I was driving back down the boulevard heading towards, like, you know, if you know the area, Bridge. And I looked and there it was, and it was up really high. It was like in the movies, like woo, 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 like right above me. It was way up high to the right. And it was there again. And I turned around and we're driving and it's all like, you know, along the river, it's above us, and they're looking, they're like,
man, I think that fucking thing is following you. So I get to Bridge Street and I took a left and boom, the helicopter went left. So now I'm like driving all the way up Bridge Street towards Cowan, New Hampshire. And there was like some brick apartment buildings on the left. And I pulled behind the building. So I was out of sight of the helicopter. And then boom, there it was above us. So I actually went and gave the car to a friend of mine. He went to Chemsford, to Drum Hill, and he just drove around the rotary for 5 minutes, like kind of letting them know, like, hey, fuck you. You know, so that was how we knew. And that's when I knew, like, the stakes were raised. Like, you know, I was about to get into serious trouble because they don't fucking get helicopters following you. So I was pretty, it wasn't a giant shock, put it that way. I knew they'd been following me, you know.
It's funny, you came in here looking at some of the books. You told me that you had some time on your hands, obviously, yes. And you spent some of that time reading.
Alex Strucked, Ayn Rand.
Yep. Yes. So, was that the first point in your life where you just, there's nothing else to do? You have to just occupy your time with reading?
Definitely. I remember the first book I read, I was in the DYS in Mattapan. I was the only white kid in there, Challenge. And those kids were good to me, those black kids. They weren't like, you think, oh, you're the only white kid. Like, you're getting beat up every day. It was like some gladiator school. But you know what? They were good. They were good to me, man. They weren't. It wasn't like that at all. And the first book I read was The Deer Hunter. You ever hear that movie? It's a Robert De Niro movie, The Deer Hunter. But it's a great movie. But yeah, it sounds like the book, it's a real good. So it's a Vietnam story. But that was the first book I read. And then kind of a voracious appetite for books after that. You know, it gets you out of it a lot. You know, you're really in, you're reading some books. Sometimes you can't wait to get back to your cell to finish reading it. But I read all, like, stuff no people would read in school. I read, you know, Grapes of Wrath, To Kill a Mockingbird, you know, all those books I read. And what was the other one? Restaurant? To Kill a Mockingbird. What's the one, the kid who's like institutionalized? I just mentioned it.
Oh, Catcher in the Rye?
Catcher in the Rye, yeah. I read everything, you know. I read all that stuff. But yeah, I really get into reading in there, you know.
Do you still read now?
No, I got it. I don't even watch TV anymore. I never watch my own fucking podcast. I'm always like, I wake up and I'm out the door.
Do you have a favorite book that you read during that time?
Oh, man. I don't know. What's some good Thomas Wolfe ones? Did you read Thomas Wolfe? Oh, my God.
What's your ass?
What was the one they made up? They made a movie out of it. Oh, fuck. Bonfire of the Vanities. That is a fucking cool. I know you hear these titles and you think it's about some New York City cop. He's a real good writer. Real good. Thomas Wolfe. But a lot of true crime, a lot of Nelson DeMille. Just a lot of stuff, you know, a lot of stuff.
So when you went to jail, was that like the first time you ever had some like formal education, I guess you'd kind of call it? I mean, I'm guessing you didn't take school too seriously growing up. No. I mean, and this was the first time you were kind of hunkering down and just reading books?
Probably. You know, I remember I was also recently when I was in, because eighth grade was my last thing in school. And I remember eighth grade or seventh grade, I had a math teacher, Mrs. Earl. And I'd be doing mescaline every day, selling drugs in school at seventh grade, eighth grade. I remember she would pass out the test for the other kids, and she would walk over, put a box of crayons on my desk and a blank piece of paper, and just put a zero on the test and go, "Yeah, put your name on the test." And everyone would be laughing, and I'd be laughing. I thought it was funny, you know. Today she'd probably be vilified, right? Like, you didn't try to help this kid, but I was, you know, I didn't want it. I was an unruly student, to say the least, you know.
Did you have any side hustles like when you were locked up in jail? Because I know, like, you always hear like stories, like, you know, you could be selling drugs in there, obviously, yeah. Or you could be, you know, any other supply that's like value, like snacks or I don't know.
Really. Yeah, taking medicine there, and always have a little book going like that. I think the best hustle, like, obviously drugs and everything, but the best hustle in prison is the guys that can cut here. You know what I mean? They got, you know, they always do a good bid, you know, because everyone always needs a fucking haircut, you know, a fade, and people always pay them, you know, whatever it is, $2, $3, $5 with the canteen, you know, you're doing fucking, you know, 5-10 haircuts a day. I always wished I learned how to cut here, you know. But the book's always good, too.
What about a tattoo?
Yeah, tattoo. Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, I could never draw, but yeah, that is a good one. I actually got one prison tattoo. I got my son's name, but that was the extent of my prison tattoos.
How do they get those out? Like, how do you get that? It's not like a normal gun, is it?
No, they make a gun out of like an engine to a fan or something like that, and just needles. And they'll use, like, back then they used to use cigarette ashes and water to make the ink.
Real sterile, huh?
Yeah, not so much, you know.
I think you're probably more known for supplying the tattoos, right?
What do you mean?
When people speak, you know, the number tattoos.
Oh yes. The V-shooter tattoos. Oh, yeah. I heard that's why I wanted to come on here. People were like, the Nickel Up guys, they're thinking about actually getting a V-shooter tattoo.
Oh.
I was like, you know what? These guys sound like some fucking sharp kids.
What is the qualification for a V-shooter shooter tattoo?
He's just got to be down for the bean shooter tattoo. Yeah. You could be number 34. Is 34 going to be the Paul Pierce or the David Ortiz edition?
Oh,
33 was the Larry Bird edition.
See, my mind immediately went to Paul Pierce. But
yeah, but well, but when you say Big Poppy.
Yeah. Oh, I might have to be it.
So you show up 34 Big Poppy?
So can anybody be a bean shooter? Or are you the only bean shooter?
I am the only bean shooter that I know of.
Okay. How did that name come about?
So another friend of mine from Staten Island, I actually, did I mention PW? Yeah. I mentioned PW. He gave me that book on the last podcast. That's a Brooklyn Staten Island thing. Being shooter is like a bullshit. Someone who's always exaggerating and, you know, yeah, I fucking banged three chicks last night. I guess, yeah, shut the fuck up. Being shooter, like, you know. So this kid, I'm in rehab in Florida, and get out. And he's like, yeah, I'm gonna fuck with that guy. I'm like, he's a fucking bean shooter. And I'm like, I always say this. I go, I felt like the kids from Salt Park when they're on the field trip, the New York kids. They don't know what a queef is. I'm like, what the fuck's a bean shooter? He's like, you fucking Boston? You don't know what a fucking bean shooter is? I'm like, no, I have never heard that term. So then I found it hysterical. So I was constantly calling everybody a bean shooter. The funny thing is, an ex-girlfriend of mine's like, what the fuck's bean shooter? Because people think either shooting drugs or bean pills or bean Boston, or people have that, or people think it's like a sexual thing. I've even had that.
I thought it was like Latina girls, to be honest.
Yeah, see? People have no clue.
Well, that's good, though, because it keeps it open. It could be anything.
Yeah. So I was calling everybody a bean shooter, and then I started my Snapchat back then. A kid, Evan Yanovich from South Boston, he says to me, hey, Mike Lee, you got Snapchat? I'm like, what the fuck Snapchat? Because I was bad for it. Mickey took me out of Florida and got me in rehab. And it wasn't like I was on social media. I was, you know, injecting heroin and cocaine on a daily basis. So I wasn't big on the old building my social media platform. So he's like, you know, you want Snapchat? I'm like, what's Snapchat? He's like, oh, Mike Lee, you need Snapchat. You know, I was always cracking joke, you know, just fucking laughing, having fun. And I bump into him now, and I'm like, yeah, you were right, Evan, I needed Snapchat. Then one time he's calling me, he's an iron worker, and he's in some meeting, and he's like FaceTiming me. I'm like, what the fuck, Evan, FaceTime me. And he's like, these people I work with don't believe, like, I know you. And I go, no, man. I'm like, you're the reason I fucking, I downloaded the Snapchat app, you know what I mean? So, yeah, so that's how it started. Me just never had any type of plan to grow social media or anything. It was just me, like, you know, grabbing jokes and clowning and sending shit to my friends and putting it on my story, and then it's still going.
So I was asking you earlier when you first got here, what keeps you doing this? Like, is it just you get the validation? Do you like the validation? You like refreshing and seeing all the likes, seeing the views, or do you just get enjoyment out of putting content out and, you know, creating content and getting creative?
Well, I think the end goal and everything is, well, maybe I can make some money off this.
Sure.
Okay, so now that's the drive. But I definitely think there's a component where I'm getting validation and I'm getting almost like drug addiction, like endorphins, because they'll shadow me. I mean, I'll be like depressed. Like, I'll get a post removed and I'm like, here I am. May 2nd, I'm going to be 55 years old. And I'm like depressed because Instagram fucking, you know, I only got, you know, I lost 100 followers. It's fucking retarded. And sometimes I got to sit back and go, dude, take a look at yourself. Like, it's not that serious. It's fucking Instagram, you know, but when they, you know, they're so sensitive when they remove something, like I'll have some post that's going ultra viral, and all of a sudden, bang, I get an alert, your post has been removed, you know, offensive language, and it's like, I'm sick over it, you know what I mean? So yeah, there's definitely a component of validation and get some type of rush off it, you know, as sad as it sounds, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Fucking social media, yeah, that I'm letting something like this actually, you know, dictate something or bother me or, you know.
It seems silly, but, like, there's a ton of, like, documentaries now, like, projects, like, narrative that, like, social media, and, like, I wouldn't know. I've never done any, like, of those drugs or anything, but, like,
comparable in the high and like the addiction, and like there's so many properties, and it's created all the algorithms, TikTok, Instagram, everything's created to keep you on there for as long as possible, because that's what makes the platform money. And so it is addictive. You know, you are going to feel the emotions to that, feel connected to it, and like when you're separated or when it's not going well, it's gonna impact like outside of your
life. Crazy, isn't it?
What?
And even for us, like, you know, you get the first alert and it's like, oh, you got 6,000 views on your video. So then it hits like, you know, the For You page on Instagram.
Yeah.
And then it hits 10, and then it hits 50, and then it hits 100. And every one of these little benchmarks is like another little, you know, dopamine click in your brain.
Yeah.
And you just sit there and you're scrolling.
You keep checking,
And it's like, oh, you know, 400 followers, you know, 400 views, 800 views. It goes up and up and up. And it's great. But, you know, post a video and you're sitting on your phone for 2 hours after
that. They got us, so they, I speak myself, they got me hooked, right? It is. It's like, you know, like an endorphin rush in your brain. I learned a little bit about that from being in rehab, you know, it sends out, you know, this rush. But yeah, people are hooked, like TikTok. And I mean, it's not good. It's terrible for kids, right? Young girls, everyone compared each other to everything else. You know, it's not good.
Talk about the other business that you have currently.
When I first got back from rehab in Florida in 2015, I started a small power washing business. I piloted it into a roofing business. So I do some roofing. I bought my first house. Thank God, my close friend Spiro, he's big into real estate. He knows your dad also. Yeah. He found me a house, $135,000 in roll, right? And yeah, the upstairs was gutted. It, you know, it needed a lot of work. I probably put $70,000 into it. You know, I had some money. I was making money. Thank God, I bought the house cash. I borrowed $60,000 off my father. And I bought this property because I was in Florida in a sober home, and I'd been in a few, and you know, I couldn't help but do the math. Like, well, this is this little shitty house in Florida, a little fucking ranch house, right? I'd be like, you know, there's eight guys in there paying $200 a week, $1,600 a week, $6,400 a month. What the fuck's a mortgage on this place? $500? Like, my mind's always thinking like you guys, right? My mind's always thinking money, money, money. How can I make a buck? And I'd say, wow, these guys got, you know, 10, 12 sober homes? Fucking $6,400 a month. You know, I'm doing the math. So it was always, and I'd say also, you know, I like being at Soul Homes. I like being around, you know, guys like you and young kids and fucking playing cards and watching sports. It was like I was right at home. I spent a lot of time in jails and prisons and DYS. So I was always around guys and just breaking balls, like I'm sure you guys do, and fucking, you know, laughing and having fun. So it seemed like a perfect thing for me where you could help other people. And I could, like, I'm always at my house just playing cards with the guys. Like, they're texting me now, you were in the fucking UFC fight. Like, what's going on? You know, like, I got to get with the credit card and order the fights tonight, you know. So it was just so perfect for me that. And I also, I have the massage business, right? I have a girl I dated and she started the massage business, and she's kind of edging me out of that now. It's basically all hers now, you know. It's a legit place. So I got the those are my three things of income. And like everything, you know, you got to diversify, right? Whether you're selling drugs, whether you're a bookie, whether you're this and that, you know, you can't put all your eggs in one basket. You know, even if you only got, you know, $200 a week, $150 a week coming in over here, you know what I mean, that's $600 a month extra. That's somebody's car payment, that's someone's, you know, some people's mortgage, right? But you get a couple of things. So my construction business isn't huge. It's been a little slow actually lately, the roofing business, but I do good from it. Like I said, I got money coming in from the sober houses, from the roofing business, from the massage. And, you know, if I could do something else, I will. Even if I could make an extra $100 a month, I'll do it. You know what I mean? And I'm always looking to try to have, you know, do something like that. The sober house was the best thing for me. You know, it was just people that are in addiction, struggled with addiction, that are sober. Like I said, the AA and NA meetings now, you know, you still have good guys, but it's few and far between guys that are sober. A lot of people are on medication, this and that. And it's tough for me to, you know, be around some people that are like under the effects of medication. I don't want to see somebody nodding out, falling asleep. It's not like enticing to me. It's not like I look at that and go, I want to go shoot heroin again. It's the exact opposite, but, you know, it don't do nothing for me. But the point I'm trying to get at is helping another addict does more for me than going and sitting in an AA meeting or listening to somebody get up on the podium and speak. Being around you two guys and say, hey, Mike, I've been 2 years sober today. You know, and seeing you, you started your podcast, Jack, you know, you're doing this, you're doing that. It's like, that helps keep me sober, seeing other guys, you know, do good, you know.
Can anyone start a sober home, or do you kind of need to have like some sort of, you know, educational background or some sort of history with drugs? What gives you the credibility to start it?
Well, I always say, like, some people will open sober homes because their daughter or their son was involved in drugs or passed away, and they have this thing where they want to help everybody. And I always say those people are going to get used, because they're all addicts like myself. You know, I'm always looking to get over on you or see him or lie. And it's like, thank God I've never had anybody overdose and die in my house. I've been over almost 5 years now, and it hasn't happened, because I'm there, and if someone gets high, I usually pick them off right away. Sometimes they'll get one by the goalie a few times, but it's like if you haven't drank for 3 years and you drink once, you're gonna sink your own ship sooner or later. But I'm around. But people that some people just open them for profit, and those people suck because they're not vested in the people and worried about them. But to answer your question, you can get certified and have a mass certified sober home. There's a group in Massachusetts. It's called Massachusetts Alliance Sober Housing, which is the acronym MASH. And if you get certified, the good thing about that is it's almost like free advertising. Like, once a year, they'll go certify your house, make sure you have Narcan there, make sure the rooms are big enough, make sure it's not a dump. And then your name's on a list, like if you're in jail or if you're in a hospital, if you're in a rehab, and you say, hey, I'm going back to Jeffersonville area, I'm going back to the Lowell area, I'm going to the Charlestown area, can you give me a list of sober homes in that area? Boom, my house will be on that list. But a lot of operators open up houses, you know, under the radar, would open up sober houses like that. So, and there's no zoning requirements in Mass. I think they're gonna change that eventually. Really, there's no zoning requirements. I could open up a sober house next to your parents' house, next to the mayor's house. I mean, I found out the hard way with my second house. They find out who I am, and they're signing petitions. They're like picking in. Nobody wants
the neighbors are.
Yeah. But then they won't.
We need a seaport sober home.
Yeah. Oh my God. Listen, you'd have to put about 30 guys in there to cover the rent. But the first house, you know, 13 guys. They had 200 a week. Most of these guys, the state don't pay for them. Most guys that are addicts are blue-collar guys. Like, they can get out of jail or rehab, and, hey, I got a job landscape, and I got a job paid, and I got a job, you know, at Amazon making fucking $20 an hour. And it's, you know, $200 a week, you know, no bills, especially in this day and age. You try to get an apartment now. I mean, if you don't fucking have money, and even if you had money to afford this place in the seaport, they run a record check and your credits suck. You've been evicted from another place. It's hot. It's fucking hot to get a place for a guy who's got a check it passed, been in jail, got no landlord references. Yeah, you're up against it these days, man. Never mind the cost of living. So it's kind of a bargain, really. 200 a week, you're not going to pay any bills, you know? You're just going to stay sober. That's what I tell guys. Guys will say, oh, what's the rules? I'm moving in. I'm like, listen, I'm not a halfway house. I'm not like super strict. Right, you know, I have a curfew, 10 at night, 11 on the weekends. But if you're there a month or two and I see you, I go stay here. I'm not gonna, you know, I'm not your probation officer, but stay sober. No, that's the only requirement, you know?
Love these guys.
These guys that you have in your sober homes, do you ever, like, what's the vetting process like for them to come in? Does somebody ever try to be like, yo, I wanna come in, and you stick the guy's bad news, you don't think he's gonna stay clean?
Constantly.
So what's your vetting process like? How do you figure out if somebody's a good egg or not?
So basically, I'll get a phone call from someone, right? And if you call me and say, hey, my name's Jack, I'm from Chempsville, I know this one, that one. I'm like, all right, I'm listening. You know what I mean? You seem like a good kid. Hey, yo, is this Carl's place? You know, like, yeah, all right, you know. Or like, hey, man, you know, right away, I talk to someone for 3 seconds, I'm like, I'm getting a bad vibe. But of course, I always want to Google them or make sure they're not a sex offender or, you know, cruelty to animals or anything fucking crazy, because, you know, we have what we call a good neighbor policy, you know. And I had one guy who come in, he seemed like an older guy, and he's calling me up. He was a real gentleman, right? And my daughter came in, and he was like cooking for the house, like making chili. He's got like wingtip shoes on. I don't even think of it, right? And my daughter's only 15, but like, if I introduce you, she'll shake your hand, look you in the eye. Hi, I'm Jewish. She's always been kind of good like that. Like, I always told her, look, someone behind me would be like looking down at your shoes. And she met this guy, and she fucking pulled me around the corner. She'd be like, this guy, she was 14, it was a year ago. This guy just gave me the creeps. She's like, did you Google it? He was like this nice old guy, right? And I'm like, right when she said, I had this like foreboding, like, no, I didn't. She's like, he didn't look me in the eye. Like, when I shook his hand and looked at him, he was looking down at his shoes. And then a little kid told me this, and I'm like, I'm feeling like, well, I'm an idiot, right? This ain't good. This ain't, I just, so I go in the bathroom, and I Google him. And I was just, I mean, the first thing I saw wasn't so bad. He went in Hillary Clinton's campaign office with a bomb in, like, New Hampshire. So that wasn't, that was like, all right, you know. And then all of a sudden, the rapes started popping up, you know. And I'm just like, oh, my God, you know. And this, so I come out, I looked at her, and she's like nodding her head. And I'm like, no, good. She's like, I fucking knew it, you know. She just knew it right away. So at least she has some street smarts, the kid, you know. And, you know, once in a while, I pull the guy aside. I says, hey, listen, man. You weren't totally forthcoming with me with everything. And, you know, like I said, you know, you can get a pass on the Hillary Clinton. The Hillary Clinton thing. But, he said something that was kind of funny. I go, but the rapes, no. I goes, why didn't you mention that? He goes, that's kind of a tough one to bring up, you know. And he was like, you know, I'm innocent. He started pleading his case. I'm like, well, what about the other one? There was another one where he escaped from prison and raped somebody while he was on escape. I mean, this guy looked like, just like a, you'd never in a million years think, but when you Google
it. How'd he pass the vibe check, though?
He just, like I said, once in a while, one gets by, goalie. You know what I mean? I didn't totally vet him. I didn't Google him, but he changed his name anyway. His name was changed. He was crafty. He was crafty, that guy, but I got him out. You know, I got him out of the house, so. That was a good one. He seemed so good too, you know. He told me he was in the culinary industry for like 25 years. I'm like, yeah, you cooked in the kitchen in prison. The guy did like 20 years, you know. So he wasn't lying. He definitely had some experience in the culinary industry. I'm eating this guy's chili. It was probably fucking neighborhood fucking dog. My fucking daughter, fucking 14-year-old daughter, meets him in 2 seconds and says, nah, this guy ain't passing the smell test, you know? But
what was it like for you bringing your daughter like around those, you know, environments and showing her that? Did you give her some kind of briefing or like the first time you introduced her to that or just kind of no-brainer?
Some people have said, you know, I've always been open with her. She knows, you know, her mother was an addict and I was an addict and she knew everything, you know, from when I first got custody when she was 6. So I chose to, you know, show her that side of life, and because, you know, it's such a roll of the dice, you know, and bringing up kids, you know what I mean? It's like, you don't know which way they're going to go. And so far she's been good, you know. She smokes a little weed, she doesn't receive the chills, and I drank once. But so far so good, you know, it's tough. You don't know which way they're going to go. But my thing was, hey, let them know where they are, because I wouldn't want her to, you know, I said, hey, maybe you're the type of person that can have a couple of drinks and have fun and not be a fucking idiot and get in trouble and not do coke and not end up, you know, because you don't know if you got that gene if you're an addict or an alcoholic. But I'm not going to have her going into it blind, you know what I mean? I'll let her know, like, you know, chances are, you know, both your parents are addicts, right? Chances are, you know, and...
You have to know the history. Yeah.
So far, so good, you know, but I showed her all that stuff. I remember when I was a kid, she was like 9 years old, being Dunkin' Donuts. She's like, this guy just came with a backpack and he didn't even order anything. He went right in the bathroom. And I'm like, yeah, you know. And I'm sitting there, and then the guy comes out, like, whacked out, lying on coke. And she, like, gets up and stands behind me. So she's seen it, you know. So she's aware, you know. She's aware of her surroundings. And I think it's a good thing, and we'll see. Hopefully everything works out, you know. Like I said to her also, I says, and it's terrible, but it's not. Like, I tried to get her into Vogue school, and I fucked it up because when they had the online learning in class, I said, you don't got to do any of that. They're not going to keep anyone back this year. And then she goes to get in the Vogue, and they're like, she got 38 on excuse absence. I'm like, when? Girl doesn't miss a day of school. They're like, well, during the COVID. I'm like, oh, this fucking COVID. This fucking motherfucker. So, yeah, so she couldn't get in the Vogue, and now she's in Lil' I, which is a fucking zoo. And I'm like, you can quit tomorrow. She's like, why say that? Like, she's worried. I gotta go do this extra class. I don't want to fail. I'm like, why? Who cares? She's like, what? She's like, hates me for it. I'm like, school, don't matter. A high school diploma means nothing. A college diploma means nothing unless you're some Chinese guy going to Harvard, you know, doing 6 years of fucking Harvard. Other than that, like, It really don't matter.
So. And even in that case, it really doesn't either.
Yeah. My, I know a guy who graduated from Harvard. He works with my friend Spiro. Yeah, you know, graduated from Harvard. He sells real estate now. So.
It's like a corny like quote that always pops up, but you know, it's like the A students work for the B students. The C students are the executives and the D students run the companies or some shit like that.
Really?
Like,
yeah.
It's true though. It's true, you know? For the most, I don't know.
Yeah, if you got that hustle, you got that hustle. Thing,
right? You skate your nickel up.
Mm-hmm.
So.
You can imagine now going to fucking UMass Amherst or UMass Lowell or wherever, right? For 4 years and partying. And then what? You get out. Then you fucking go to get dressed up for a job interview and go sit there in front of some asshole fucking sizing you up and, you know, begging for a job. It's like, I think, you know, this day and age, trade is the way to go and have, you know, some side hustles.
Totally. Yeah.
So what's next for you? How are you going to keep getting your nickel up? Are there any new business ventures you want to get into? Anything that piques your interest right now?
I'm always looking for another house. You know, real estate's always big. Right now it's tough, but I'm always looking for another house, for another sober house, because I feel like the, you know, you look around and see the problems with addiction, everything, and it ain't going away. It's like opening a funeral home, right? People are just going to keep dying, right? You know, it's sad to say, but this addiction thing, you know, it ain't going away. And you know, I look around, like that house I bought, $135,000, right? 13 guys and they're paying $200 a week rent, you know? So there you go, 52, 10-4. I'm like, what property in Lowell, in the shitty neighborhood, are you going to rent out for $10,000 a month?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And you're doing a good thing at the same
time. Yeah, so.
And you mean it too. You're not just doing it for the money, right?
Yeah. No, that's what I said. It's a win-win.
Yeah.
You make money. I mean, there's a lot that goes with it too. You know, the insurance is through the roof. The other day I had to, you know, renew my insurance and it's, you know, I've quote like $4,000. It's $800 a month for 9 months. And everybody's got air conditioning. You know, some sober houses, you can't have air conditioners. I don't give a fuck. Like everyone's got shit around. I got to go through the house and be like, listen. You leave your TV and your air conditioner on, they're both going out the fucking window. It's my fucking electric bill, especially now, it's through the roof. So it's not like I'm just rolling in the dough. There's a lot that goes with it. But yeah, it's a moneymaker. And on top of that, you're paying off a house. My other house, I only go $100,000 off it. It's not all, it's like worth like $560. It's a nice house. And plus, I put a lot of money into it, hardwood floors, and they don't even know that. This is just going on Zillow and looking at it. So. You get in real estate. Real estate's a way to go. You know, right now it's real tough buying a house with interest rates. It fucking sucks. But they said I got Spiro, who's always looking around. Sometimes someone will call him. Oh, I'm looking to sell my house. They don't want to list it with a realtor. And you know, once in a while they'll we'll get a home run and they'll he still wants to make money off me. I fight him like, you want to get $50,000 off me? He's like, fuck you. This house worth what? I'm selling you for $230. But yeah, but you got it for $180. We pick it back and forth. But I tell people when I started doing good. And some money, I bought my first house, had some money. He bought a place in Florida, and he has another place now, beautiful. But he bought a place, and it was in Delray Beach. It was a little inlet off the intercoastal behind his house, and he fixed it all up, and it was a small place. You walked in, it was a little living room upstairs. It was like a bedroom and a shower. It was a real small place. He's like, I want to buy it. I want to get another place. That's right before COVID. He's like, buy it off me, $330. I'm like, $330? You know, you paid... You know, whatever he paid right at the time, you know what I mean? Fucking 200 or something ridiculous, right? And I'm like, he's like, yeah, but I put 40 grand in. I'm like, yeah, but you got, and here I am bickering. The place just sold for 700,000. It was right before COVID, before everyone started moving down there, everything. So it's one of those things where here I am. It's like I'm stepping over a $100 bill to pick up a nickel. I'm arguing with this kid, like, well, why are you making money off me? And now I'm like, look at this. I lost out on fucking $300,000, more than that, $300,000. But I'll still break his balls because he make money off me. That being said, Spiro.
You get Spiro on here. He's got some good stories.
Yeah, no, he's low key. You don't want to be on the podcast. I try. He's a big real estate guy, and he's always looking out for me to try to find a house in Lowell. One thing is you got to worry about too with the sober house. This pocket, you know, you go in the neighborhood and you get a house with fucking 10 guys, and you know, most of them got scooters, you know what I mean? But a few of them got cars, you know, 4 to 5 will have cars, you know. And but yeah, that's, I'm always looking for that. And right now, just coasting with the sober house, the roofing business, the massage thing, and social media. I decided to make a few bucks off that, you know, last year. that my bookie, you know, did a thing with me and they're paying me $3,000 a month. It's not a ton of money, but hey, it's something. For like 7-8 months, they did it with me. Then they just stopped after college basketball, you know. But hopefully I can make some more money with that, you know.
Yeah, especially with the podcast, everything, as you continue to grow, more streams of content. Totally.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
Yeah.
Getting your nickel up day one.
That's the goal, man. That's the goal.
There you go.